Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Welcome in to the Husker 24/7 podcast. I'm Michael Bruntz, Brian Christofferson over there. Plenty to get to today, a post National Signing Day edition of the podcast. We'll hit on some of Matt Rhule's comments during his press conference and kind of put the 2024 class to bed. It's kind of been a little drowsy, kind of getting in the bed. We'll tuck it in with a few final thoughts and some Super Sixes as well. Before we get going, if you're following us on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button. We would love that. So please do that. Follow us on Spotify, wherever else you can find us. That's just the quick thing to get out of the way before we get rolling. Brian, how's it going? We made it through another class, and we'll get into what Matt Rhule was talking about. But what's new?
Not a lot's new. Do you know if there's a particular like story that the 24 class likes to hear before bed? Is there that they you know like a go to?
Yeah, I don't know. Good night, Moon. Maybe Where the Wild Things Are. That I'd like Where the Wild Things Are as a bedtime story for the kids because there's not a lot to read. Like after you've been chasing them around for 12 hours, you don't want to like have to like sit and read some Chaucer or something like that before bedtime.
Yeah, I can't say I've actually as one without kids, I haven't read Where the Wild Things Are. But it sounds like it's about my speed. Yeah. So that'd be good.
So we heard from Matt Rhule after National Signing Day, a little bit later than what was scheduled because of Keona Wilhite's commitment announcement. But let's get into – he had some interesting comments, I thought, a few kind of bullet point items. I guess first off, I mean, the 2024 class is largely going to be defined, I think, by the quarterback picture. The fact that you got Dylan Raiola in what was an upset with or with not an assist by Kirk Herbstreit, apparently, based on the way things have gone the last 24 hours. But beyond that, I mean, he kind of just laid it out with the quarterback picture. I mean, I think some people maybe expected that, that Nebraska is going to go and get just kind of a stopgap depth piece at quarterback in the spring. They still might, but he said they're all in on their three quarterbacks, Harburg, Raiola, and Danny Kalen. What did you kind of make of just the just kind of off tackle, straightforward, this is what we're doing approach?
Yeah, I can't say I'm surprised. I mean, he did say, you got the sense if he had his druthers, he would like four quarterbacks, you know, in the room. And that's always a possibility he could add one like after the spring. But also he sees the benefit right now of having three scholarship guys because reps, you know, all those guys need reps. Like he always speaks about how Heinrich Harburg, even though he's, you know, a fourth year or whatever college player, he hasn't played a ton of QB snaps by rules measure. And so all that you know, work that he's going to get, because there's not as many guys, because like last year they had six scholarship guys at one point, and it's just crowded and it's tough to get everybody out there for as much as you want. I'm sure some guys, if they're honest about it, realize they're like fourth through six and they're maybe not like feeling it quite like you would if you think you're like in the fight. So I think it's a pretty, I get where he's coming from. Like this spring, it's like a good deal with two young guys, and then Harburg is the vet kind of trying to prove himself, where it's like you get all these reps to grow with your position coach, Glenn Thomas, and to try to prove yourself and prove yourself to your team. And I thought that was an interesting comment too, just when he was talking about, you know, guys don't give a crap about like what a guy was rated last year or what he did in high school or this or that now that they're at Nebraska. It's about like, what can you do for me now? Can you show that you're putting in the work and you're that guy who is so diligent to his craft that it's going to help me and help us win? And so that's the opportunity in front of all of these quarterbacks. Obviously, Dylan Ryle is the most highly profile one that everyone's going to talk about the most. But for all three, it's a good situation. And Daniel Kalen, it's a good situation too. He came here to get to grow as a quarterback and show what he can do. And he's going to get a lot of opportunities to put his foot forward. So you got to like that.
Do you get the sense that they're going to try to pursue somebody? I mean, they're basically looking, I would guess, for somebody who profiles similarly to like a Tristan Jebbia, like a guy that's been through it, a guy that maybe wants to get into coaching, maybe under like somebody who kind of understands the roster math and where things kind of break out. And do you think they'll pursue somebody, or did you get the sense that like that's something they might do?
I thought they might do it. I thought that's how I got it. I don't know how you took it. It's like, I got the sense like if in a perfect world, if you ask Matt Rhule, like how many scholarship quarterbacks would you like in a given season, his answer would be four. But he also knows in this climate, you know, especially at that particular position, it can be difficult to have that, to actually achieve that. And for now, the three guys looks pretty good for the spring. Now, like if there's an injury or something, though, you know how it goes. Immediately there's some panic and it's like, okay, now what if this happens? And then people start to get really concerned and think about the depth chart. So that's why that fourth guy is kind of nice. But I think you laid it out within the question of what it would be. Like a Jebbia, like a guy like who I don't think you're thinking like is Kyle McCord, who's coming in here to take the job in the fall. Just like a guy who has been around, kind of has a lay of the land, understands what the situation is a really good like guy in the room to help, and he could be available if needed. That would be like my ideal person. I don't know if he's out there, but maybe that pops up in the summer or something. And if not, you roll with what you got and you hope everybody just keeps good health. But for right now, it's three guys and they're all in on the young, on the youth movement. I mean, he said that on early signing day, and that's where they're at. They went all in with Dylan Ryle and Danny Kalen, and let's go. Let's see him develop, as he says, from the ground up with a guy he really trusts in Glenn Thomas.
That's a good segue to the quarterback coaching conversation. We'll hear from Glenn Thomas for the first time, at least with the media horde on Monday. But Matt Rhule kind of hit on maybe his background at Temple and at Baylor with Thomas, where they kind of did go youth movement a little bit. They built things from the ground up. What did you kind of make of those comments and maybe what he had to say about Thomas? I mean, we had kind of been talking for weeks during the dead period that this was probably going to happen once the NFL season was done. Mm-hmm. But it seems like there's a very clear picture of what they want out of that quarterback coaching position.
Yeah. I mean, Glenn Thomas, there's just such a trust factor there because there was success together. And it shows in the numbers. Like if you go look at Temple when he was there, PJ Walker, who is in the league now, and actually got to start this year, he had pretty good TD interception ratio and really grew, I thought, sort of under the tutelage of Glenn Thomas. And then you saw the same thing, I think, with Charlie Brewer, you know, where he had really good touchdown interception ratio numbers. I think if you go through it, for the most part, especially after what we saw last season. But all those guys developed. They each of those QBs got better from year to year, and they became winners. I mean, that's the bottom line is at Temple, PJ Walker and that offense, they knew how to operate efficiently and to win games and to be clutch. And Charlie Brewer was sort of that too, as he went through his career at Baylor. And so there is a good background of, I think, for the QBs in the Nebraska room to look at what Glenn Thomas has done and said, this guy's had some success. And oh yeah, he's coached in the NFL. He's coached Matt Ryan with the Falcons. And seeing what it takes to communicate and have success at that level as well. So he's probably got, you know, a lot of respect coming in just with his background with the quarterback. So it makes sense to me, the hire. You know, I know sometimes people are like, oh, he hired his friend or it's his good, you know, it's a buddy hire and all that stuff. That's what you hire guys you trust and you believe in and you know what they're about and you know you don't have to babysit them and you know he's going to take care of his business and this guy's going to take care of his business. And that, I mean, that's what you want on a staff. So I understand it completely.
We were kind of wondering, I guess, I think a lot of people were, about what the division of labor would be in terms of play calling, offensive scheme, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we got our answer very clearly. It's the Marcus Satterfield show still. He's going to be handling tight ends with input from the other offensive assistants, certainly Glenn Thomas as well. But what do you kind of make of that? And I was thinking about it, and I think Matt Rhule's comments about, you know, you as an offensive coordinator, you get pulled away a lot. And I think it makes sense to have a coach that just only deals with quarterbacks. I mean, I think early on I would have said, well, it helps to have that guy be the same, the quarterback's coach and the OC be the same guy. But I can see the appeal of having a guy coordinating an offense that's not having to be pulled away from the quarterbacks. Like I felt like Matt Rhule sold me on that a little bit more than maybe what I was thinking earlier this off season.
I could definitely see it within a game too, like on a Saturday. And like, let's just say one of your freshmen threw a pick or something. Like, it's nice if you have a guy who's just like dedicated to being in that guy's headspace and like, okay, what did you see there and all that? Well, the OC is in a different position, like figuring out, okay, how do we come back from this in the big picture way? Right. Like not this individual, but the whole team. So that makes sense to me. It was interesting how Rhule differentiated, like he would like his QB's coach to be his OC, maybe if you're running like the air raid, as he said, but they're not. And so he thinks, you know, Satterfield working now more with the tight ends actually aligns better with his OC job title. And we've kind of talked about this before. I understand that because they want it to be a positionless offense. They've spoken about that since they got here. And there's no position that represents more like how can you be creative and like you got to figure out how to work those guys as run blockers, but also get them loose in the passing game. And some of them can be receivers and running backs at the same time as tight ends. There's so much going on with that room and the way they've recruited it too, Brunts, as you know, with some of the guys coming in, it's an exciting group that Satterfield has. So it does make a lot of sense. That's what they wanted him to coach a year ago. It just didn't sort of work out with how various job hires happened. So, yeah, I have no problem with it. I like that it was definitive, too. Like, sometimes I've covered teams where the head coach is all wishy-washy about, did you call a few plays? Did this guy? And it becomes like this government secret, and everybody starts to rumor about it. And he just put it to bed like in February, like, you know, Marcus calls the plays and the co for Glenn Thomas stands for collaborator, which I guess I should have known.
Yeah. It was right there in front of your face the whole time.
I didn't see that, but now I do. So, yeah, he explained it well. He always does. He's good at that. I mean, that's like you can see why, you know, he excels in the press conferences at laying out, this is our plan and this is why we're doing it. And he did it there. So I've said before, I don't know if this matters now, Bruns, because people will be like, well, Satterfield's still calling the play. So if the offense has bad days, it'll come back to him. I do think maybe still this applies, though, that it feels like there's an understanding within the fan base and media. It's like more spread out, like in how they're planning and attacking things. And so like all the arrows don't necessarily have to go at one coach or one guy, like for something that goes wrong, you know, like it's very much on everybody. So I don't know if there's use to that or not, but I do know Glenn Thomas and Satterfield have known each other for 20 plus years. And so this is not like a new blend where they're trying to figure each other out this week. They've been around each other.
Yeah. I think that continuity helps a lot. Like you don't have I'm not saying this happens all the time, but I think there's, you know, maybe sometimes a blending of egos with coaches whenever guys that haven't worked together are kind of forced into that situation. I mean, you got to kind of figure out what a guy's tendencies are and why they do things a certain way. And it's nice that you're starting a little bit further down the road with those two and being able to collaborate. So did you get a feeling that there's a kind of a heightened sense of urgency this year, just kind of given what they have coming back?
Yeah, I think so. I think they know they let a few slip too last season, like you're 5-7 until you aren't, he would always say, but it's also like, man, that could have been 7 or 8. Everybody knows it. There's games that were on the table with like a play here, play there. You've got a lot of guys back from that team who saw it. It was like right in front of their face. Like how, like, you know, if you would have done this a little differently. He got very specific at one point. He was talking about the Maryland game and the pick in the end zone. And there was just like guys not completely doing what they're supposed to do, really. And that's a spot where I got the sense he was basically saying that's like a standard football play where just like go make the play. Like it shouldn't have been like this big talking point about should have they done this or that. It was a pretty standard, like everybody knows their role. Somebody go get the ball and score a touchdown or whatever. And instead you had a pick, and he said that's, you know, that sort of stuff's not going to happen this year. Like we need guys that like they live for that moment. And so there, I did sense the urgency, and also there's a understanding, I think, within winter conditioning of things that players maybe thought, oh, we're doing this great now. Now it's okay, and great needs to be higher. And so we'll see. That's the fun talk of the off season. Of course, everything always sounds like it's going to be better and all that, but you know, it's good to hear like Jamal Banks being involved and right away. Apparently he's at every event and racking up points and impressing. And he said he was going to come in and be a leader, and he's doing that. And so if you can get some of those guys to mesh with the guys returning, you know, maybe you do get those extra plays that you were missing a year ago.
Lastly, from Rule, we got a kind of a cursory injury update, guys that are out for spring, guys that are questionable for spring for parts of it. Correct me if I'm wrong on the list. So out, we know, is Turner Corcoran, Ramir Johnson, Gabe Irvin, Garcia Castaneda, still coming back from the knee injury. Questionable, Princewill Umamielen with the shoulder, coming back off of a shoulder. Malachi Coleman also a little questionable with the shoulder. Is there anybody else that I'm missing out of that crew?
No, you got the main ones. Now, you know, he didn't say these guys, but like, you know, Rex Guthrie and Evan Taylor are newcomers who are enrolled early, who are, I would guess, limit. I know Evan Taylor is not going to be out there in the spring, but Guthrie could be limited, I would suppose, from the injury we reported on from his high school days. So there's those. And then it sounds like Maverick Noonan's a good update where he could be a participant after he got injured last fall camp with a knee injury. And beyond that, I'm trying to think if there's, you know, Brody Tagaloa, we heard, is around. So Rule didn't specifically talk about him, but he'd be good to get, we'll have to get an update at some point on like how he's doing, because we thought he was going to play last year before he was in an automobile accident. I guess the things that stand out to me though, Brunts, and you can take it after this with your thoughts, you know, running back with Gabe and Ramir out, as I was expecting, you know, it kind of becomes all eyes on Dante Dowdell, not that they wouldn't be, and Quentin Ives too. Like, can he like show what he's about sort of this spring, and we start to hear a little bit about him? And then Turner Corcoran's injury is the other thing. That's going to go into fall camp and maybe into the season. So that's going to be one that makes the O-line picture a little interesting.
Yeah. The running back picture, and Emmett Johnson was, you know, coming off of a pretty strong year when he was thrust into it. You know, he's got a chance to kind of build on what he did last year without kind of the crowded room, which might bode well for him too. But yeah, I mean, Rule talked about Dante Dowdell, and the reason they wanted him was just, he's a bigger back, and they wanted more of that presence, you know, in the Big Ten late in games, those November type games where you need to get a couple first downs and salt away time and things like that. So it's going to be all eyes on him. Like you said, I think Emmett Johnson's got a chance. We've how many offensive snaps did Quentin Ives play last year? One or two, and he didn't get the ball on him. So, you know, that's another person that needs to kind of stand up and be counted this spring. I know based on everything that Matt Rule said, they love his potential long-term, but just haven't seen it yet. So, you know, the one that's the Corcoran one was interesting to me, because I think everybody in their heart of hearts sees him as a guard, wants him to make that transition. Nebraska probably has enough tackle depth finally to where they could put him at guard and just kind of see how it goes there. But it sounds like that's going to be, you know, maybe into fall camp before he's back 100%. So, you know, the additions of Micah Mazzucca makes a little bit more sense now, I think. And, you know, Matt Rule had pointed comments about how he needs to kind of come along fast too and kind of get with the program. But what did you kind of make of the Corcoran thing? Because I think he was always kind of the wild card in everybody's discussion about what that offensive line is going to look like this season.
Yeah, I hope he's back by fall camp, but it sounded a little dicey. And if he is back, I think he really could fit in at guard. We've always been guard fans of him, like wanted to see him at guard and just see how that would look. So I hope he gets that opportunity. But right now it sounds like it's an injury that's going to linger close to the season. And so that worries you when the head coach actually says that in February a little bit, you know, because, you know, usually there's a sort of optimism about, oh, you hope he'll be back by the summer or fall camp. Didn't sound as much like that was an automatic in this case. And yeah, Mazzucca, time to step up. It sounded like, you know, when the head coach gave the answer he did about him when asked about him at the press conference.
Yeah, well, Anthony Grant feeling to that one. Anything else we need to hit on from Rule? I think that was the bullet points that I had. Was there anything else that he said that bears repeating or talking about?
No, not anything we can't cover over the next few weeks still.
plenty of time for all that. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit of the additions, two additions, notable additions on signing day. Then run through our super sixes that are always guaranteed to hit. So we'll be back in just a second.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. And we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. It's Micah Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Okay, so the 24 class is finished up, but Nebraska added a couple pieces. One I think that kind of fell into their lap a little bit. Another one where they had to beat off a future Big Ten foe to get the commitment. Keona Wilhite, defensive lineman out of Arizona. Nebraska beat out UCLA for him. He had been signed with Washington, released from his letter of intent. With all the coaching change happening in January. When you kind of look at the way the class was pieced together, defensive line was one area where it was a little bit thin. And I know they've got the numbers that they feel pretty good about on the roster now, but Keona Wilhite, I think, was a really kind of nice cherry on top for this class because you're getting, what, a 6'5", 240-pound kid that can get after the passer a little bit. What did you make of that addition, and what did it kind of do, I guess, for kind of your overall picture of that group that they're bringing in?
I think Keona Wilhite's the kind of addition that they thought so highly of him that they went after someone in the February signing day period that when they wouldn't have had or probably even thought they had to do anything at all. You know what I mean? Like, it was a unique situation, obviously, when Kalen DeBoer left Washington for Alabama. DeBoer, by the way, at the early signing day press conference in Washington, when they signed Wilhite, spoke about how this guy, he's like, this guy is the type of guy you need to play in the Big Ten. Like, he's got all the stuff, you know, and we expect him to be on the field sooner than later, basically, is what he said. So they really liked him. The thing that's cool about him is he's like 6'5", 240 now, but I think he could be 260, 265, you know, something like that if he wanted to be. And he played next to a five-star, right, on his team that I guess you could say overshadowed him somewhat, like, in the headlines. But I've heard from a couple people down there that are in that area, and they say he's Nebraska got as good as the other, you know, on this one, and we'll see. But there's definitely some feeling that Wilhite, like, was probably as good as, like, his counterpart who was a five-star. So a lot of promise there. Sounds like he's a real good culture kid too, from everything we've heard. And so why not? As Rule says, if you can add big people, I'm going to add big people, like, whenever I think they can play. And so, you know, good opportunity here. And I feel like it was kind of a February steal. It was a sleepy signing day, as you'd expect. But if Wilhite ends up being a really good player, and we'll get to Kamir Prescott and some of these guys, I mean, you'll end up saying, hey, that was a worthwhile Wednesday.
Yeah, it's kind of felt like in some ways that the ideal for Nebraska is, like, you get your guys – mainly in your class in the summer, you add some guys, you know, as you go along through the fall and in December, but January is a time when you work ahead. And if there's kind of like a best available type guy that you have a connection with, you know, pursue that. And I think that's, you know, with the way college football is now with coaching changes and, you know, those happening later and later, because, I mean, as you have an expanded college football playoff, I think you're probably going to have to see some of that movement happening later in the recruiting process with the calendar the way it is now. You're going to see those guys pop up a little bit more, and guys getting released from letters of intent or guys opening recruitments at the tail end of December and taking it into January and February. I think you're going to see a few more of those guys that you can kind of pursue and are worth pursuing as the years kind of go along. So that's a good get. Kamir Prescott, a defensive back out of Philadelphia. He had been committed to Wisconsin for 6 or 7 months, reopened his recruitment late in the process. Nebraska gets him on a signing day decision, technically a walk-on now, a guy that's, what do we call him, scholarship adjacent, I think is probably the way to say it at this point. I would expect that he would be on it pretty quickly. 6'1", 190, a safety. He's also played some corner. He's played slot corner. He's had to line up as a nickel. He's a really versatile defensive back. That's another instance, I think, of Nebraska just kind of flexing its connections. And, you know, he had visited in the spring, so he wasn't completely unfamiliar with Nebraska, but a good late addition that, you know, a crowded defensive back room, but another kind of talented piece that they're adding there.
Yeah. And, you know, he doesn't technically count on the 85, but it's hard to track that anymore. As we've said, you know, he's a player who's a scholarship caliber player that, you know, you're right there. It is stacked up with bodies right now, but that's nice. You can have them go compete and, you know, not everybody's going to survive. There'll be guys at some point who will move on. That's the way it goes. But, Kamir Prescott, when he's a type of prospect, like in the spring or summer, if you heard he's visiting or he's on your campus, you're pretty excited about. So I don't think anything has dramatically changed in how you would view about him as far as like now being on your roster. And so nice job by Evan Cooper on that one of keeping that relationship rolling. And, you know, there was an opportunity where the player probably needed a chance somewhere and he's a good player and Nebraska's like, come on over. Let's do this. Let's see what you got. He'll get as much a chance as anybody else. Like I know sometimes it's like, oh, he's walk on, he's scholarship. James Williams was a walk on last year, technically. And he was like the story of October around here or whatever, you know, so who cares? In a way, that's how I feel about it at this point.
So both Wilhite and Prescott were added late. I don't think either of them made it onto very many Super Sixes. Most of that hay was already in the barn by the time we got around to actual signing day. You want to run through your Super Six real quick? That are a list of six guys and a sleeper that will absolutely, positively be hits for Nebraska. Either, I guess, how do you approach it? Because that's the thing too. Like I always kind of take like a long term, like in 4 years from now, how many guys from this list are going to be considered hits? And do you approach that differently or how do you kind of think about it?
Yeah, I think first off, anybody can be allowed to look at it anyway. Like we had a couple votes, I think, that didn't have Raiola number one. And if you look at some of those votes, they're more focused on like some of the transfer guys, you know, I believe, and how they could impact 24. And that makes sense to me too. Like I get it. So that it's good to have all different kind of thoughts on it. I kind of look at it unless I think I like the person to be able to contribute multiple years, I guess is the simplest way to say it. However, if I thought for sure Jamal Banks were just going to like have a Trey Palmer 1100 yard year or something, I'd throw him on there probably. I do think he's going to be good. I don't know if he'll be that good. So I didn't put him on there, but I went with more like your traditional guys who are going to be around. And I had, first off, my sleeper was Donovan Jones because he's from Omaha North, of course. no, actually, cause he had a great senior year. I mean, I think he backed up why he got the offer in camp. He's just a playmaker. He seems like he could fit everywhere. He's really just a solid dude. I think he'll come in and he'll have success in this program. I didn't have Caleb Benning on there, but he was on our Super Six. And I think I feel the same way about Caleb and Donovan. Like they're just going to like, they'll get something done at some point as Huskers. I believe that. My Super Six is Begehi 6, linebacker out of Miami. I liked how just motivated he is to carve his own name. I like his film and all that other stuff, but he's also got like a chip on his shoulder a little bit, because, and I get it, every time he gets interviewed or stories were written about him as a recruit, it's like son of, you know, NFL standout or former Hurricane great, you know, and all that. And he's carving his own path on a different side of the ball. And I just think he's got something to him where he's going to get stuff done in the college level. So he was my six. I'll rip through the top five. Five, I had Mario Buford. Four, Dante Dowdell. Three, Grant Bricks. Two, Carter Nelson. One, Dylan Raiola. Honestly, one, two, and three were pretty easy for me. Yeah. I know you, for me, and I know you had a receiver on there on yours I really liked that I didn't have, but I totally get why you guys are big on him. But yeah, I thought Raiola, I think he's got all the tools, and it, you know, he's gonna have to meet the hype and all that, but I just good, and I think Carter Nelson ever and shine just and be just fine and get open. So I had no reservations about those guys at the top.
Yeah, my top was a little bit different from yours. My sleeper was Vincent Shavers. I think in part he just didn't get a ton of run because it was a late addition to the class. You watch his highlights and he's just a guy that can run. Like he can get around the field quickly. He gets sideline to sideline really well. And he feels like the type of guy that's toolsy enough that like Nebraska would feel comfortable putting him on the field younger in his career, just because it's like, you can do one thing really well. We're going to maximize that, really highlight that in some ways, kind of like a James Williams. Like there's something that we can trust you to do in a very specific role. We're going to do that. And I think long-term, I think he's got a chance to be pretty good. Already up about 10 pounds since he's been on campus. That's kind of the big thing to me. He was what, like 210, something like that when he arrived. So I think he's got, that was a good late one for Nebraska, I think. Quickly beyond that, I had Caleb Benning at six, Mario Buford at five. I think both of those guys, they just kind of have a maturity about them that I think kind of allows guys to be contributors, and they're smart enough to understand that, you know, maybe it's special teams to start out with, but they're going to find a way to kind of be used on the field. And, you know, I think Buford, especially with Nebraska not taking too many just true corners and there being some question mark about the depth there, I think he's a guy that you know, maybe sooner than later could get on the field. Beyond that, I had Carter Nelson at four, McGahee had at three. I just think that he flashed so much in his highlights, and I guess I didn't during the recruiting process really have a great appreciation for that until we got to December, and it was kind of like, okay, this guy is he's a real problem on the field. And just kind of had a nose for the ball, was just kind of always around it. And I think that kind of stood out to me. And like you said, I mean, I think he's got a chip on his shoulder a little bit coming to Nebraska to kind of make his own name. And I had Ja'Cory Barney at two and then Raiola at one. Obviously Raiola, for all the reasons that Brian said, I think he's got to be number one. And then with Barney, I think he's a guy that I think we kind of talked about this maybe in December a little bit, but he's a guy that I don't think we're talking about nearly enough in this class. He didn't play just strictly wide receiver, played quarterback, running back. I think he did pretty much everything on the field. With enrolling early, with the kind of path, I think that there is somewhat to playing time at the wide receiver spot, I think he's going to be a guy that you kind of hear from sooner than later. So I probably is a little strong to have him at number two, but I know that Nebraska really felt like that was a really big recruiting win for them over the summer when they got his commitment over Miami. So I'll kind of bet a little bit there, but I had Ja'Cory Barney at number two.
I like the boldness. I think he's kind of an athletic freak too, with like his workouts and stuff like that. He's just some of the stuff I gathered in interviews. He's a little ahead of the game from some guys his age. And so he knows he has to bulk up a little bit upon arrival maybe, but wouldn't shock me at all if he contributes this year. He's planning on it. He's a very confident individual. And I liked of all the people I interviewed in this class, he was like to me the most confident and like sure, like I'm gonna go there and get stuff done.
Just as long as I can keep him off the ice, which I still feel badly.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. He took a tumble as we all do at one point in the Midwest.
Yeah. Anything else from the 24 class that we need to hit on? I think that was all I had on the docket today.
No, I think you nailed it. With what you said, your super six is good. I like it. I like Shavers too as your sleeper. He would have been on more lists if he weren't like so new to the conversation. I'm pretty convinced.
The way that this staff put this class together made it difficult to pick sleepers. I think like. Mm. Some of these evaluation guys that, you know, got offers at camps or, you know, a lot of the June guys, I think could probably fit that bill, you know?
Yeah. I mean, is Gradney a sleeper or is he not? I mean, but I think Gradney's a guy they viewed as like someone they were in on, you know, before some other schools. 24/7 Sports was always pretty high on Gradney.
Yeah.
So like Braylon Prude, pretty interesting guy you could say as a sleeper. You know, Rex Guthrie you could say as a sleeper. They had some guys who didn't end up here that would have been great sleepers too that we thought might at times. So you're right. It's actually a pretty good conversation for that. I think you could almost do a list too. Maybe this is what the Super Six is to some people, but it's not always to me. I'm kind of thinking high end stuff. I could almost make a separate list of guys I feel good. Like I'd do this list and maybe we should just do this for fun in the off season of like guys you feel good are going to get something done. You know what I mean? Like you don't know that they're going to be all Big Ten or whatever, but you just believe without a doubt, like they're going to make a catch at some point on a 3rd and 6, or, you know, they're going to do something in their Husker career where on a Saturday, we're like, okay, there he is. We wrote about him once as a recruit. Now he's making a play in a game, like those kind of guys.
You're advocating for a sleepy six. We could, maybe get some sponsorship, get like a mattress company, Casper Sleepy Six.
That's a pretty good idea.
We'll have to run that by Schaefer, see what he thinks.
Yeah. I like it.
All right. Well, that's all we got for today. Lots going on over the next week, though. Basketball is riding the NCAA tournament bubble roller coaster. They've got Michigan at home on Saturday. Baseball a week away from starting. And, lots. We'll have Glenn Thomas coverage from his availability on Monday. So make sure to get to Husker 24/7 for all that coverage and more. And we'll be back next week with more Husker 24/7 podcasts.